Welcome to Black Mask, the frequency of resistance.
On CKUW 95.9 FM.
We're broadcasting from Winnipeg, Manitoba.
On occupied Anishinaabeg-Aki.
Homeland of the Métis.
And the historical territory of the Nahiwak and Nakota.
Bringing you news and views from an anarchist perspective.
Every week since 1999.
Welcome to Black Mask for today, Wednesday, September 11th, 2013. My name is Rob McGregor, and I'll be in the host chair this episode. Ethan Osland is my co-pilot.
How do?
And today, without much delay, we're going to get right into an interview that I did about a month ago with Tammy Kovich, who is no longer, but was at the time, the volunteer and programming coordinator at the Waterloo Public Interest Research Group. And if you don't know what a public interest research group is, you are soon to learn. So we'll get right into that interview right now. I'm speaking with Tammy Kovich from the Waterloo Public Interest Research Group in Waterloo, Ontario. She is the volunteer and programming coordinator at the WPIRG. So welcome to Black Mask, Tammy. Oh,
thank you for having me.
So the first question I have is about your background prior to working at WPIRG. So what sort of things were you involved in? Sort of how did you cut your teeth as a radical activist?
Oh, geez. I've been involved in a lot of different things over the years. I guess my first sort of introduction to radical activism actually goes along with my first introduction to PIRGs, actually. When I was doing my undergrad at the University of Ottawa, I got involved with the OPIRG there, and that was sort of my first introduction to like student politics and radical campus organizing, and sort of got involved and stuff there and was involved in various campus projects. And that was at the same time where I was sort of developing my own politics and figured out where I fit into all of that and got introduced to a lot of anarchist ideas and kind of got involved with anarchist organizing in the city. So I did that for a few years, and then I moved to Toronto again for school to do a master's of political science at York University, and York sort of has a reputation for being a kind of a lefty activist space, and got involved in a lot of stuff there. Specifically in Toronto, I was doing my master's around 2009, 2010. So obviously there's a lot going on in the city around then for anti-G20 organizing. So that was something that I was very much a part of, and also involved in sort of different anarchist projects, anarchist printing projects, book fairs, conferences, those type things. And then I went for my master's. I started a PhD, decided that wasn't really what I wanted to be doing and wanted to be spending more time doing organizing. And I saw the job posting come up for WPIRG, applied on a whim and got it. And then I've spent the last couple years doing organizing in Kitchener-Waterloo.
So how many years now have you been involved at WPIRG?
I've been involved at WPIRG for 2.5 years.
Okay, and we should say that you are now in the process of leaving your position at WPIRG and moving
on. Yeah, as of September, I will be elsewhere.
All right, and we'll get to that maybe in the end, sort of looking forward kind of stuff. But for people who don't know, because we haven't even explained it yet, what exactly is a PIRG?
A PIRG basically acts as a campus hub for radical social and environmental justice work and organizing. The structure varies from PIRG to PIRG a little bit, but at least in Ontario, we are part of a provincial network and follow the same sort of structure. So basically, we get our funding through a student levy that's set up through a referendum, and that varies from campus to campus in terms of the amount, and that provides the operating budget for the organization. The organization is then governed by a volunteer board of directors and has anywhere between 1 and 5 permanent staff that sort of keep the upkeep of maintaining a not-for-profit organization. And then within the organization, it sort of acts to facilitate activism on campus. So they usually have a resource library, run campaigns on campus, do a lot of education and programming. Within the PERG, there's usually action groups or working groups. The terminology varies from PERG to PERG, which are basically small collectives of people that work around a specific issue, campaign, or project. So, for instance, at the PERG I work at, some of our groups, Grand River Indigenous Solidarity, as its name would indicate, does a lot of Indigenous solidarity work. We have groups like Food Not Bombs, that does anti-poverty work, Books to Prisoners, that does organizing around prison justice and stuff like that. Basically, we just act to support that work and try to continue to foster the growth of radical movements on campus.
So the name, then, of Public Interest Research Group seems to me to be a little bit misleading because there isn't necessarily so much focus on the research aspect, and it's more about action.
Very much so. I think the name generally sounds incredibly, incredibly boring and not really representative of what PERGs do. Depending on the PERG, some PERGs do a little bit of research work, but then it's definitely like action-based research and like social movement-based research that's usually done with an eye to providing information that's crucial to taking action. Like, it's never just a matter of doing research for the sake of producing a report or anything like that, but producing research that's relevant for community organizers and activists. I think PERGs were established, actually, WPERG, the PERG that I work at, was the first PERG established in Ontario, and it was established in the 1970s, and PERGs have sort of evolved since then and have changed over the years. The name has changed the same, but the emphasis and the focus of the work we do has definitely sort of evolved.
So do you sort of keep the name the same in order to on purpose be boring and maybe throw people off the scent that there might be anarchists within?
I don't even know if it's really that much of an intentional decision, but the idea that we're like the provincial network is a registered charity. Individual PERGs are registered not-for-profit organizations. We're all connected. And the decision-making process that would have to happen to change the names and then the paperwork that would be involved would be a huge headache. And I think, too, for people maybe not familiar with PERGs, the name is misleading. But most people, if you're on a campus with a PERG, you come to learn what a PERG is, because they're usually very visible on campus and they're the ones doing the radical political work. So I think with people who are on those campuses, they come to know actually what PERGs do.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that PERGs were registered nonprofits and that overall it's a charity. So I know a little bit about nonprofits, and I know that there's rules governing sort of how they operate and like they can't be partisan and things like that. Does any of that, those rules around nonprofits interfere with the work of the PERG at all?
Well, not really. I mean, so the big thing, there's many more rules for a registered charity that generally are much more limiting in terms of, like, you can't do political advocacy work, and it's much more on education. But we sort of, it works out well for us because just our provincial network is a registered charity, so that sort of limited what our provincial network can do. But basically, we just exist to coordinate things and facilitate communication between PERGs. And then at the individual PERG level, that doesn't really influence a whole lot of what we can do. I mean, there's very basic things, like we can't be, you know, breaking the law or stuff like that. But as a campus organization, you can't really be doing that anyway. So it doesn't really provide many restrictions upon which those that already exist as just being an organization on a campus.
But you can talk about breaking the law, and you can maybe even advocate for breaking the law.
I mean, you could talk, like, it's also, there's sort of a weird dynamic of PERGs are, you know, they don't have a universal political line, right? So people working at PERGs generally, like, have a radical orientation and generally, like, a left political orientation. But within that, people have different politics. There's not, like, the PERG mandate is fairly broad, so it's, we use consensus decision-making, we're non-hierarchical, we work in anti-oppression politics to the work that we do and promote social and environmental justice, and, you know, that can encompass a lot of different political perspectives and can include a lot of different forms of action and organizing. So within that, there's not often, like, an official PERG line about certain things. Like, there's people that are volunteers or staff at PERGs that, you know, may advocate or defend certain tactics or legal or illegal things, but they're generally doing those as individuals, and those aren't, like, PERGs don't generally take official positions on those per se.
That sounds like a smart way to do things.
Yeah, it works all right.
So could you tell us maybe on a day-to-day basis, like what your job actually entails at the PIRG? Like how do you facilitate radical activism on campus?
I mean, I wouldn't say that there's any one day that's the same. I mean, it really varies like throughout the year, but I guess if I would average it out and say like a typical day in the office for me, and again, it depends what your staff role is, but so my job description, I take care of programming, so that includes the events, education, training, campaigns and stuff that we run, and supporting our volunteers. So a typical day, probably some boring admin stuff, like responding to a whole lot of emails and stuff, planning programming, so putting together workshop series, documentary film series, bringing in speakers, organizing conferences, supporting and potentially planning actions depending on what's going on. So there's sort of that component. Then in terms of volunteer support, you know, creating volunteer positions, creating opportunities for people to get involved with the PIRG, trying to be welcoming when people come into the office and asking them what they're interested in and trying to help them sort of think through some of the options of how they can start acting on these things that they care about in the different ways that can look. And then in terms of our established groups and volunteers, just acting as a support for them. So helping them, you know, if they need someone to facilitate a visioning session for them or help them with strategic planning or answer any questions or even help them with just like logistics for stuff that they're doing. That's largely what my role consists of.
Positioning as a radical activist group on campus or an organization, I can imagine that there's a lot of tension with people with different political beliefs on campus. And you mentioned that PIRGs get their funding from student levy.
Yeah.
And I know that in the past, WPIRG and other PIRGs have faced defunding referendums.
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering if you could maybe give a little bit of a history of how WPIRG initially got funded, if you know at all sort of what those campaigns consisted of, like how it was sold to the student body to fund something so radical that a lot of people would probably disagree with. And maybe if you could talk about recent campaigns to defund or refund or keep funding or those sorts of things.
Yeah, sure. I mean, defunding is definitely always an issue for PIRGs. I mean, there's a handful of PIRGs that sort of exist on like very well sort of lefty established campuses where the idea of them getting defunded is highly unlikely. York, for example, comes to mind. But for most PIRGs, the possibility of defunding is sort of this thing that's always on the back of the organization's mind. In terms of how WPIRG got started, it's sort of interesting. So I mentioned previously that we were the first PIRG in Ontario. In the 1970s, the University of Waterloo was incredibly different than it is today. Like over the past 30 years, the campus has just completely changed and went in a different direction. So in the 1970s, the University of Waterloo actually had a reputation for being one of the most radical campuses in the province. It was really well known for its independent studies program, which students set up, which sort of allowed the students freedom to design their own programs, what they're studying. Sit-ins and like direct action in campus happened all the time. Anne Hansen was a student at the University of Waterloo in the 70s and actually, as part of the independent studies program, went to Europe to study the guerrilla movements in Europe and sort of came back inspired from that. So the process of setting up a PIRG and getting student support at the university, it was generally a campus climate that was very supportive of sort of left causes and activism. So it was, I think, fairly easy, an easy sell on campus at the time. Since then, the university has changed and evolved, and now we don't have a reputation for being really a radical hub, so for that in terms of the university campus. We have a reputation for our co-op program and partnerships with like large corporations that students can work for, our engineering program, hard sciences, so sort of the student makeup that obviously affects the students that a university is kind of, you know, appealing to and bringing in. So the campus climate has sort of changed over the years. So that's sort of the piece of how we got established. In terms of dealing with defunding, it's sort of hard. So you always have this issue of your funding depends on student support. you get established through a student referendum, and you get defunded through the exact same process. So on one hand, you want to be cognizant of that, and you want to be organizing and providing things that are relevant to students, that like make very real either material benefits to their experience or in terms of sort of like education or fulfillment that they get out of it. And you want to do that. I think one of the pitfalls that perks sometimes fall into is sort of really worrying that if you push things too far, if you rock the boat, if you take too radical of a line, that you're just going to alienate students, and it's going to get you defunded. So sort of like play it safe and try not to do anything like really explicitly political and stuff. But the problem that you get in there is, one, then why do you exist? You've sort of taken away your, like, before even getting defunded, if you let that influence and stop you from doing the work that's your mandate, and so stops you from like supporting radical work, then you're not really doing what you were established to do to begin with. And then you also face the risk of not really having any active base of support. So you just sort of like, no one really dislikes you, but no one really likes you. Like for the more like politically oriented radical students on campus, you're not really providing much. So if you do face a referendum, which, you know, there's an article that was published, I think, in the fall in Briar Patch magazine, a previous OPERG staff and previous OPERG board member from OPERG Toronto, and sort of did a research into the history of sort of like defunding campaigns and like attacks on PERGs, and how that sort of like corresponded with like larger trends of like in like the larger Canadian political context of conservatives getting voted in and stuff like that. And one of the things that came out of the article was that referendums and facing defunding campaigns usually come out of like larger political pressures, and it's not just a matter of you doing too many radical things or rocking the boat too much. So if you're going to likely potentially face the campaign regardless, you want to make sure that A, you're doing work relevant to your mandate, and B, that you have an active base of support, that you're proving that you're relevant on campus, so that when you do face an attack, because those are more or less inevitable, that you have an active base who will come out to support you and help you fight that campaign to not get defunded.
So because you mentioned that the Waterloo mm-hmm. campus is getting sort of away from its radical lefty history, mm-hmm. has the base of WPIRG shrunk along with that?
Well, I feel like I can only answer that in a limited capacity. So I've been a full-time staff at WPIRG for the last 2.5 years, and in that time I've pretty much lived there constantly. However, when I started my job, you know, the first time I had been to that campus was for my job interview. So I wasn't really familiar with the campus. I didn't do any of my previous degrees on that campus. I wasn't familiar with it. So I have the context of the time that I've been there. I mean, obviously you can talk to people, to sort of get their perspective on things. I think in terms of wide support, it's not the same as it was in the 70s. The campus is very different, but I think we've worked on developing a strategy working to try to continue to mobilize students and gain support for students. But one of the things that we've done a lot of is building strong relationships with community and activist groups that aren't necessarily campus-based. So obviously we don't want to lose sight of the fact that, you know, we're student-funded. Our board of directors is largely comprised of students, and we are based on campus. So we want to continue to honor that, but also our mandate, you know, social and environmental justice and the causes that our constituency care about aren't causes that are just sort of limited to the walls of campus. So working with groups that exist sort of like in the broader city, even in the region, province, even beyond that, and working on building those strong relationships has been a big part of what we've been doing.
So something that I think of when you're talking about, you know, building the base and fulfilling the mandate and getting mm-hmm. students, you know, energized and into both participating and defending the PIRG from outside attack is, how does the PIRG fill a niche that no other group can fill? Because that's a question that I've been asked a lot when discussing PIRGs here in Winnipeg, because we don't have one at our university. And so I talk to people about the potential of starting one, and they say, well, we've got, you know, the Students Association, we've got the Women's Center, we've got the LGBT Center, you know, there's the Aboriginal Student Council. So there's all these different groups that fulfill different roles. And I guess people have sort of a hard time conceptualizing how the PIRG would be something different. And obviously, it's very much a similar context in Waterloo, where there is like a women's center and there are these other groups. Right. So how do you fill a niche that those groups can't or won't fill?
Well, I think my initial thoughts on that is sort of a twofold thing that makes a PIRG unique in terms of our role. One being, so you sort of like, you just listed off a whole bunch of things. Like, you know, there's already an Aboriginal student center. There's already a women's center, you know, a queer center. There's already folks on campus doing environmental work like that. So what do PIRGs offer? Those may exist in their individual locations, but one of the things that PIRGs offer, and I think is really important about PIRGs, is coming from a place that acknowledges that those issues can't be separated. So those struggles have to, like, very much correspond to things going on. So, for instance, you can't talk about, you know, sustainability and environmental issues on campus without talking about issues of Indigenous sovereignty and how those things relate. You can't talk about feminism without working in an analysis of queer issues as well, and really expanding what is traditionally understood as feminism and working from a perspective that is promoting all of those things as intersecting and promoting projects and campaigns that bring those together. So I think that's one thing that a PIRG offers. Another thing that a PIRG offers, and I think this depends on your campus, is the ability to push for a more radical perspective and radical action on those issues. So for instance, on our campus, yes, we have a women's center, and yes, we have a queer center. However, they fall under the control of our student union, and the coordinators that work there and the work that they do is very much sort of has to stay within certain parameters, where the work that PIRGs do, we don't have to. So, for instance, where our queer center spends a lot of time putting on, like, social events and stuff that's like, really important for the lives of queer students on campus, and that's great. WPIRG also works on sort of pushing those issues to have more critical conversations about sort of, let's say, like, the nature of same-sex marriage, whether that's, and working on, like, larger critiques of sort of different institutions as they exist in society and correspond to other things, and, like, working on to have, like, a more inclusive analysis of trans issues and making sure that when you're discussing these things, you're not forgetting to also talk about race. So I think we can offer sort of the ability, because of our unique position as a body that is generally autonomous from other control in the university, that we can push things forward to consider sort of different perspectives.
And so despite being sort of a different animal than these other groups on campus, do mm-hmm. you typically work hand in hand with those groups that sort of align with the particular cause or issue that you're addressing at the PIRG?
Yeah, I mean, we always, when it makes sense and when our work aligns, we always try to work together with other groups on campus, absolutely. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense. Maybe because what we're doing might get another group on campus. So there is a large, you know, so let's say the Women's Center on campus, for instance, may want to bring in a slightly controversial speaker, or may want to bring up a controversial topic, and they're not able to do that. So some volunteers maybe approach WPIRG to help put on the event. And that happened two years ago. A volunteer from the Wind Center really wanted to bring in Igna Musio, the author of Cunt, to come and talk for International Women's Week. The university was not okay with the speaker. They found the title of her book offensive and didn't want her on campus. So WPIRG stepped in and provided funding and largely organized the event, and that was definitely like working hand in hand with folks from the Women's Center, and definitely obviously in line with their mandate, but we largely did that in where they couldn't.
Yeah, I think I remember reading about that. Did the university actually try, or did they actually take down all the posters for the event because they said it was profane or something like that?
Yeah, there's a big controversy. They got campus administration got involved. They got the Waterloo Regional Police as well as campus police involved. It was really absurd just for posters because they had the word cunt printed on them and they considered that offensive, and they tried to shut down the event. And it was a really ridiculous, dramatic response. But that was a large issue on campus. And we had trouble with all of a sudden our room bookings no longer existing and all that sort of thing. But the event ended up happening. It was really well attended. And I think one of the things that comes out for something like that is it mobilizes people in a way that an easy event doesn't. So people got really angry about the fact that the posters that we were getting censored and everything like that. So more people came out and were sort of organizing on campus to make sure that it happened. So I think that was something that at the time was frustrating and kind of infuriating of the university's response. But in the end, people built relationships out of it, learned some important skills from it, and I think was worthwhile.
Yeah, I love when things like that happen where maybe in the moment you're concerned, but you realize you've really been given a gift by the administration that they're being so absurd.
Totally.
And who exactly was offended? The old white men who work in the administration?
Literally, yes. They were the ones coming in to yell at me in my office.
Let's get back into the particulars of your job. What do you live for in the job? Like, what sort of inspiring things have happened? What big successes have you had? You know, what can you look back at over your 2.5 years and think, wow, I really did something special there?
I think the few things that I feel happy about is definitely the relationships that we've built with radical grassroots groups. We've worked really hard to do that, and I've seen that really pay off in the organization. And the other thing, and I feel like this sounds sort of corny, but actually just watching students sort of develop and their politics change and really radicalize through being involved in the PERC is probably the aspect of my job that I always found most rewarding and most fulfilling, to sort of watch that happen and see sort of like new student volunteers become, you know, serious and committed radical organizers sort of through time. Sort of came in with an analysis and maybe thinking like, oh, we just sort of need to change this little thing and we'll be okay, and developing an analysis that really starts to acknowledge the systemic issues of the things that they care about, and correspondingly the need to develop a large scale radical response to those things.
And is there anything about the job that you've grown tired of and that you're happy to leave behind?
I think one of the thing that I definitely feel sad about leaving. But the thing that I feel most happy to sort of leave behind is, it's sort of strange working in a paid organizing position. I know other people that I know that work in NGOs feel the same tension. I think sometimes it can just feel odd, like, why do I get paid for work that I do when so many people don't? So there's sort of that component to it. There's also the odd component of figuring out how you disentangle yourself from the organization. So, you know, I have my role at WPIRG and I do my job. I also, you know, personally hold some political beliefs and have some politics that really aren't appropriate for WPIRG to publicly have. So for instance, like, I can think of an example. I was at a protest in Waterloo for something, and someone knew me. It's not a very large town. There's not a lot of organizing that happens. So WPIRG is fairly visible with things. So someone just knew me as my role from WPIRG, and it was around the municipal elections that were happening. And someone wanted to interview me for the paper and ask me my opinion on the upcoming election. And WPIRG is a non-partisan organization. We don't participate in party politics. However, a lot of our volunteers, some of our community supporters, you know, see value in municipal politics, you know, might be NDP supporters. My view is I'm staunchly against voting, electoral politics, but that's sort of a time where I'm being asked something. I have my personal beliefs about it. But if I say that might come back and have repercussions from the organization. And I think that's just one example amongst several of sort of that ongoing worry of sort of where does my identity as this job stop with my personal politics and stuff that I do, and getting, and sort of people confusing and conflating. So there's work that I do for WPIRG, and then I'm involved in different projects that aren't associated with WPIRG. But because people know me as a WPIRG staff, they might end up associating other work that I'm doing with the organization, which isn't necessarily appropriate. And in the context, for instance, of a referendum, could be an issue. So that was kind of an ongoing concern that I had the whole time that I was working there. So I'm sort of looking forward to a time where I can just sort of basically worry about where I stand on things and, you know, just engage in work that I'm passionate about and not have to sort of be in the back of my head wondering if this will negatively impact the organization that I work for and care a great deal about.
That sort of makes me think of the anarchist critique of, or one of the critiques of representative democracy is the aspect of trying to represent the views of many people in the person of one person. And so even though you're not elected and even though it's not that sort of organization, you're still running into that same sort of tension.
Well, I mean, the problem is people do it regardless, right? So it's not ever a matter of, like, anyone speaking on behalf of the organization. But going back to sort of examples of defunding campaigns, Queen's University, which has a very well-organized sort of conservative body there, Oprah Queen's faced a really nasty defunding campaign about a little over a year ago. And they actually lost some of their funding. Luckily, they get other funding from grad students, but they lost a good chunk of their undergraduate student funding. And the coordinator there was really put through the mud and publicly attacked. And I mean, and for things, not even for stuff that she did, but for like things that she was associated with. So she, like, she went to a G20 workshop where someone talked about property destruction, or she was known to have like some sketchy anarchist friends or stuff like that. And, like, those very little things actually came up and were used to sort of mount an attack. And those are a bit more of a stretch. So, you know, I couldn't help but think about that. You know, I'm involved in a lot of explicitly anarchist projects. I've written about topics that would be not great to come out in a defunding campaign around, like, questions of, like, property destruction and violence and stuff, and part of an anarchist organization. These are things that if they were to come out, and sort of if the strategy was going to be to target sort of particular staff, that I would be concerned. I'd be very concerned of happening.
So you're worried about specific things coming out, but you are an out, if we can use that word, an out anarchist, you know, within the context of the
park. Yeah, that definitely is true.
Yeah, so does that even in itself, divorced from any of the particular ideas about, you know, property destruction or electoral politics, does that run you into any trouble, that people just come up to you and start yelling at you because you're an anarchist?
I generally haven't had that problem. I mean, I think I sometimes will get in debates with people in the office about different things, but also, like, I try to separate to a certain extent, like, some of my politics from my job. And, like, also people work in the office. I'm fairly friendly and non-assuming looking. I'm, like, tiny. I'm, like, 5 feet tall. I'm not exactly this scary bomb-throwing anarchist image that people have. And I think also if people do have negative ideas about anarchists, I think a lot of the time that might also be because they've never actually, like, met or had a conversation with an anarchist to realize that we're actually not really scary in the way that they might think. So I think, like, just building relationships with people and being supportive of a variety of work and projects that people have worked on has largely ensured that there hasn't been any conflict around any of that stuff.
So thinking about tension maybe within the office or on campus, mm-hmm. makes me think, because I have done a little bit of research into the different PERGs across Canada, and it appears that there's, you know, a spectrum of political orientation. So I'm wondering if there's tension between PERGs, that some might be sort of more to the liberal side of the things and some might be more to the radical side of things. And are there, you know, even within OPERG, sort of the umbrella organization, is there tension? Is there conflict between PERGs?
I wouldn't say that there's really tension or conflict between PERGs. I think it's fair to say that the politics of PERGs vary from campus to campus. I mean, it depends on a lot of factors. Like, obviously, the campus itself. Also, it's not just a matter of the campus, right? Like, you can exist on a somewhat conservative campus, but if your board of directors and your staff and the majority of your active volunteer base just happen to be the one group of radicals that exists on campus, that's going to influence your organization. So I think, like, different PERGs do generally sort of focus on different projects and put their energies elsewhere, but that's not necessarily a tension, like, where it makes sense. Like, some PERGs work together on things, and some don't to the same degree. And that's largely, I think, one of the strengths of the network, that, you know, we support each other and we meet several times throughout the year to sort of like coordinate and strategize. But beyond that, day-to-day projects and campaigns, like those fall, that's for the individual perk to decide, and that generally respects, and that's not really, it's not really something that, at least with my time with OPERG, and even before being a staff at WPERG, I've been involved with OPERG for years, I hadn't really witnessed any really serious tensions.
Okay, so now I think we have a really good idea of what WPERG is like and what PERGs are like in general, so I want to sort of look forward now.
Sure.
WPERG has put on a couple of really amazing conferences. There was an Engendering Resistance, mm-hmm. and the prison one, which I forget the name of right now.
It was a long title. Breaking Bars.
Yes.
Building Bridges, Challenging the Prison Industrial Complex, and Building Communities of Support, or something like that. It was a bit of a mouthful.
Or Breaking Bars for short.
Yeah.
So those just started a couple of years ago,
yeah.
and I didn't see any previous ones on the website. Was that just an initiative that you had a part in starting?
So basically the way it used to work, and the PERG network, people get so busy in their individual PERGs, the extent to which network work gets done is kind of spotty sometimes. So the name for the conferences are School of Public Interest. And what that used to be is actually a provincial project. So it would rotate between PERGs. So like every year a PERG would hold a conference, a School of Public Interest conference, and it would rotate between different PERGs. And then about 4 years ago, a WPERG got it and hosted one and really, really liked it, really enjoyed the process, thought they got a lot out of it. So the board and the organization decided to take it on as one of our annual projects, that the conferences could still happen as part of the provincial network, but regardless of every year, WPERG would organize one of these large projects, conferences. So the past 2 years that I've worked there, you mentioned the two themes, prisons and engendering resistance. And then before that, the year previously, there was a conference on food justice. And the year before that previously, so the first year that we did it, it was sort of an arts and activism conference. I think the scope of them has sort of expanded over the years and got a little bit bigger. The way we sort of envision these conferences is PERGs play an important role and do a lot on campus of sort of like introducing students and community to issues they might not be familiar with, and, you know, providing those 101 and introductory spaces to discuss issues and learn and grow is really important. But there's also limitations because people, you know, stay involved in the organization, stay involved in the community, and get tired of having those same, like, introductory-level conversations over and over again. And it's important to have spaces that you can get into more, like, 201, 301, like, more, like, intermediate, advanced, complex conversations of what it means to actually engage in organizing work around a specific issue and some of the specific challenges. So our annual School of Public Interest conference that we do every year in the Season Changes is sort of the way we envision it, is that's the one event we do all year that's actually not geared to introducing new people to issues. I mean, new people can come, and they do, but, like, our target audience is actually people who are already fairly seriously engaged in work around the specific issue that we're doing the conference in, and bringing them in to present and providing space for them to network and strategize and just come together for a weekend to have that space to do that.
And is there plans in the works for what the next School of Public Interest conference will be?
Not yet. So the way it's organized is there's a committee that forms every year to organize it, and the theme is chosen by the committee. So that'll be formed sometime in the fall. I'm not sure what they'll pick for the theme this year.
Okay. So we're just about done. I just was wondering, you personally, you're moving on from sure. the PERG, and you're going to be working on your PhD, you told me. Do you know
that is true.
What area of research you're going to delve into?
I haven't given it a lot of thought. To be honest, I had started to do a PhD previously and decided I just wasn't in the place to do it. I'm sort of going back with a different sort of perspective, in the sense that I'm not really interested in being an academic or really climbing the academic ladder, that I just sort of want to spend some time to kind of be able to read and write and spend some time thinking about some of the issues that I've encountered while organizing and trying to always have an eye to that secondary to me, to organizing and provide and like producing research that's relevant to actually doing things. That's not this abstract thing that's produced just for the sake of publishing it in some obscure academic journal. So that's kind of how I'm going into it. In terms of what I'm interested in, a few vague ideas. So I'll be doing a PhD in women, gender, and feminist studies. And a couple of the topics I'm interested in, sort of anarchist interventions in feminist discourse, the gendering of militant resistance and how that sort of plays out in like critiques of violence, and how that's something that's always sort of framed as masculine and exclusionary to what are deemed sort of at-risk identities or stuff like that. And then sort of critical engagements around sort of anti-oppression and identity politics and some of the ways those play out in contemporary activist spaces.
And you're going to do your studies in the context of being a member of the North American Anarchist Studies Network. And from what little I know about them, one of their big things is that it's not only, you know, the content, it's not only the subject matter of things related to anarchism, but like you said, it's doing work that has a practical function, not merely, you know, study for the sake of study, writing for the sake of writing, that it's to further, you know, social justice movements and radical anarchist struggle. And so is that sort of the sum up of what the purpose of the North American Anarchist Studies Network is?
I think the purpose of the network is a very decentralized network throughout North America. There's generally an annual conference that happens every year. I think it's just to provide a space for people who study anarchism and that broadly defined to sort of share resources, come together to have discussions, to try to strategize what it means to produce research that's actually relevant to anarchists. I think there's always a danger, and there's a difference, I think, between producing and engaging in research that's about anarchists or about anarchist movements versus engaging in and producing research that is for anarchists and for anarchist movements. And one, I think, kind of falls into just sort of this careerist path where people build careers essentially off the actions and thoughts of others. You know, just because someone's the first to write it down doesn't mean that they're first to think it. Like, it's usually based on stuff people are doing on the streets and stuff. And if it's not falling into sort of that careerist critique, there's also the potential that could actually be really dangerous. So if you're producing research sort of like in inside perspectives on like anarchist movements, that's generally not necessarily going to be most useful to anarchist movements who might already be aware of some of those problems, but actually be most useful to the state and law enforcement agencies. So being cognizant of that and trying to really produce research that is relevant to campaigns and organizing that anarchists are engaging in. And figuring out how to do that, I think, is complex and an ongoing work in progress, but something that I think is really important.
I hadn't thought of that angle, that by doing sort of anthropology about anarchism, you are really serving as an inside look for those who might be enemies of anarchist organizing.
Yeah, it's definitely a complex thing. I mean, you might go in with good intentions of like, you know, you see tensions or you see contradictions play out and you want to engage in research that sort of fleshes some of those out. But probably the people involved, A, are going to be the best people to work through those tensions and contradictions. And two, even if that's your intention, like, who's reading your research? Where is it ending up? Like, that's another thing, right? Like, most academic research isn't widely accessible. The nature of the writing itself makes it sort of usually laden with like very academic jargon, and then it's published in sort of very expensive academic journals. So even the giving thought to how you're publishing your work and where you're making it available is another thing that I think is really important.
Yeah, academia is kind of bullshit, isn't it?
Oh, it's total bullshit. Absolutely.
Do you keep...
We exist under capitalism and we need jobs, generally need jobs to survive, unfortunately. Right. So we all choose, I think, to make different compromises in our life in terms of how we can do that. And I think it's a mistake when people think academia is somehow different from any other job where you're making a sacrifice to sell a part of your labor, part of yourself to get a wage to like pay your rent or buy your food or whatever. And academia is no different. It's a job in that same way. And like, you make sacrifices and you sort of make compromises with your politics like any other job.
Could you get away with writing in a plain language accessible way within academia in your experience?
I think you can somewhat, but I think it really depends on what you want out of academia, right? Like I sort of mentioned, I started doing PhD once, dropped out, I'm going back again. I've been going back with the thought that I don't, like, I mean, tenure track positions in academia are becoming like a pretty extinct thing that are pretty unavailable, and actually even getting contract teaching jobs, like as someone who has a PhD, is actually getting harder and harder. It's becoming more and more precarious. It's contract work, like most industries. But I think if you go in and the idea that like you want to build, you know, a professional academic career, you want to be a renowned academic, and there's certain sort of rules that govern playing that game in terms of how you write, conferences that you're presenting in, and stuff like that. And for me, I'm not interested in spending my extra time where I'm not working, you know, presenting my research at conferences, which you need to sort of build up your CV and build up your sort of academic credentials. Like, I'm much more interested in actually participating in the movements and the projects that I care about, that are actually playing out my politics. I think it depends what you want at the end of your schooling, whether or not you can do that.
Well, it sounds like you're in the right headspace to survive academia, as far as that goes.
We'll see. I'm hoping so.
Well, thank you very much, Tammy. This has been
an
awesome discussion, and I'm sure it's broadened people's minds a lot listening, especially here in Winnipeg, who haven't seen a PERG firsthand, to know a little bit more about what they are and how they work.
Thank you very much.